Welcome back to R3 of the 9 till noon show. During the headlines, Michaela referenced that story from earlier where we spoke to John Boyle of the INTO and the plight of the qualified teacher who doesn't have a teacher number and therefore is subbing in a classroom and is doing so as an unqualified teacher. Now, we've been told by another caller that worse still, with no teaching council number, she can only sub 4 days in a rolling week and will only be paid for 4 days. She needs to make noise to get that number ASAP. It's like listening to the election coverage. Seats need to be filled and then they might form a government before January. Well, this caller says, well, if they haven't formed a government, then don't pay them their wages until a government is in place, and that might hurry them up. Interesting comment. Now, let's go to Zoom again, because we are joined on Zoom by Noel McDermott. And Noel McDermott is a mental health expert and psychotherapist. And it's an important one because we are coming up to the Christmas season. And for very many of us, it's a time that we look forward to. We're going to be happy. We're going to enjoy Christmas. We're going to have a great time. For some, they look at Christmas with a sense of dread and they have what's being called festive anxiety. And Noel, good morning to you. Festive anxiety is a very real thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge, particularly as the times that we've been through have been quite troubled the last few years, to sort of bring everybody together, meet everybody's needs and expectations. And sometimes because of family dynamics, which all relationships have been under pressure the last few years. It tends to be hothoused at this time of year, is, for want of a better word, is what we in psychotherapy call a highly expressed emotional environment.
And it's become one of those kind of comedy cliches: Christmas with the in-laws, Christmas with the family, my brother says this, my mother-in-law says that, and we're all going to get together and it's going to be like the Battle of the Somme, where there's two trenches and there's people peeking out at each other over the trenches and who's going to go into no man's land. And it almost seems like, I mean, what are you doing to yourself mentally? I mean, you know, this is supposed to be a happy family engagement, not some kind of mental torture.
That's right. Well, there are ways of managing it, and there are lots of tools and techniques. I'm going to focus a bit more on the what you can do individually, but I would say more broadly that some people live in, I suppose, more dangerous family environments than others. And so the advice for them is to do a risk assessment rather than just try and think that the problem is their own anxiety. Sometimes when we feel scared, it's because the threat is real. And if the threat is real, we need to manage that. So I think it's really important to say that. In terms of general broad anxiety, there might be anxiety related to non-specific things. So it may not be the case that there are problems, specific problems in the family, but just the sense of overwhelm that people might have, which is normal. When you've got a large event to organise, of course it's going to be challenging and difficult. And the people that don't feel any stress about it are probably living off the coattails of everybody who's doing all the work, right? So it's like, it does involve work. So if you feel a bit anxious about it, don't think there's something wrong with you. And also, it doesn't necessarily need to get in the way of the spirit of Christmas, which is about having fun and compassion and having our loved ones around us and having a nice time.
From the point of view of the anxiety, as you said, it's real. To the person who's experiencing that anxiety, it's real. Now, sometimes that anxiety may be an expression of something that in reality isn't as serious as the person may feel. And sometimes our perception of what a family gathering is going to be like is going to be way worse than what's actually going to happen. Presumably then, with that in mind, communication is going to be absolutely key. That if you're feeling stressed, if you're feeling anxious, talk to people, have prior discussions, and maybe a couple of phone calls leading up to Christmas might help break that ice and reduce that pressure.
Yeah, I mean, my experience is this, to be honest. When one says, oh, I'm struggling with something, it actually gives permission to other people to voice that as well. And everybody gets a sense of relief. We can be a bit worried at times like this about saying anything that might be perceived as negative. But actually, if you turn around and you're honest about things, then everybody else steps up and says, yeah, I feel it as well. And just that sense of being part of, rather than separated off, like there's something wrong with me, I feel anxious, everybody is having a nice time. There's a saying we have, which is, don't judge your own insides by everybody else's outsides. generally most people are feeling these types of complicated human reactions to complicated human situations, which is what this festive season is. And sort of engaging with that is great. And as you say, what anxiety will do to us is it will make us catastrophize. It's a term we use in psychotherapy. So we'll see the problem as bigger than it actually is. And there's a saying, an old saying in therapy, which is we don't run away from the bear because we're afraid of it. We're afraid of the bear because we run away from it. So you might have to repeat that to yourself a few times to understand it. So it's about saying that we can do something about this anxiety and fear by our behaviours, and one of which is help-seeking, as you described. But there are some others, and we can talk about those if you wish.
Absolutely. Because it seems to me, too, that sometimes what we do in a situation like that is we feel inadequate and believe that we won't be able to live up to an expected standard, when that expected standard that we are feeling ourselves actually in reality doesn't really exist.
Yeah, expectation. It's a killer. You know, we often say in psychotherapy, don't we, get rid of words like must, should, ought, all of that sort of stuff. Get rid of all of that stuff. And just engage with the fact that, you know, life is muddy and messy for humans, for all humans. Mm-hmm. The ones that pretend it's not are not really living, it's in my experience. And so muddy and messy is the norm, and that's okay. And letting people know about that is okay as well. In no way do you undermine sort of the spirit of kindness and compassion and love and celebration. There are things that you can do in terms of reducing one's felt anxiety. And if we replace the word anxiety with stress, because that's really what we're talking about, stress hormones. So when we're anxious or when we're depressed or when we're lonely, our body produces hormones that make us feel bad. It's pretty straightforward. But we can do things about changing that, managing those hormonal responses, managing those neurochemicals, and doing things that actually reduce that impact. And actually, over time, change our responses to stressors, which are the things in life that signal problem, and actually become better at it. And learning to manage stress is really, really crucial in terms of reducing the risk of all forms of illness in your life, whether it be psychological illness, whether it be physical illness, whether it be breakdown in your relationship, whether it be using too much drink, etc. So stress management is a really key thing, and understanding that when you're anxious, the physical psychological reactions are driven by these neurochemicals, these hormones in your body, principally the cortisol, which is a hormone, and also can't think of the other one. My brain's gone dead. Adrenaline. There you go. Sort of like that was me feeling stress. And that's classically one of the things that happens is your brain stops working. So these hormones can be managed. And one of the first techniques I would teach people is what's called polyvagal theory. It's a very simple thing where our nervous system is either active or it's relaxed. And we can regulate that nervous system. So when we're anxious, what's happening is our nervous system is activated. It's up, it's high, it's ready for action.
And you get the feeling of the butterflies in the stomach and all that. And, you know, it's a feeling we've all experienced. Yeah.
The increased heart rate, maybe your dry mouth, things like this. These are classic signs of anxiety. Sweaty palms in ready because sweating cools our body down in times of high physical activity. So we go into what's called fight flight mode, which is a way of dealing with threats. Now, if the threat is not an actual saber-toothed tiger, that activation generally is not very helpful, and we want to manage it. And by understanding things like polyvagal, people can check this out for themselves. We have what's called a vagus nerve, which is partly it's in the back of our throats, actually. It's really interesting. And when we breathe in through our nose, down the back of our throat with a slightly constricted throat, when we do that, we activate our nervous system. And then when we breathe out, we relax our nervous system because we're managing that nerve at the back of our throat, the vagus nerve. And there's been a lot of work done on breathing techniques. The British Army uses breathing techniques. They call a thing called box breathing, which is breathe in to four, hold for four, breathe out to four, hold for four, breathe in to four. They call it box breathing. There's a massive number of breathing exercises that are all predicated on this ability to regulate your central nervous system simply by the way you breathe. And it's as simple as when you breathe out, take a bit more time than when you breathe in. Try and breathe in and out through your nose. And this sounds ridiculously simple, doesn't it?
But the other side of the coin is then, as well as doing that, you're consciously focusing on your breathing. And the more you're focusing on your breathing, yeah, the less you're focusing on the perceived problem.
Absolutely. You're managing your thoughts precisely on point. And that's a sort of technique from a thing called mindful meditation. Now, people think of meditation as you have to climb up the Himalayas or something and live off a grain of rice a year and sort of transform your life. You don't. Meditation is as simple as you've described, which is breathing in and out through your nose and then thinking about your breath. And you can bring your mind to the physical experience of the breath coming in and out of your nose. And what that does, literally, is it moves your attention away from the things that are making you feel anxious into something that you know is managing your anxiety. So you're in a win-win situation now, a virtuous circle. And there's a lot of medical evidence behind this as well, that this way of being, this mindful way of being with yourself, improves your physical responses and reduces your illnesses. There's been some quite strong evidence that it even reduces your risk of things like cancer, for example, which is bonkers if you think about it. Just simply managing your breathing and managing your thinking can be absolutely transformative in terms of your health and well-being. So I would really encourage people to investigate that as a sort of as a practical tool that they can bring in. And the great thing about this sort of mindful approach is that literally you can do it anywhere you want. Nobody knows.
Is it important to give ourselves permission to remove ourselves from a situation? As in, we say to ourselves, oh, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this. But I mean, if we say to ourselves, okay, I'm going to do it, and if it's going pear-shaped, if I'm not happy, if I'm not comfortable, I'll say, excuse me, and I will leave. And if we give ourselves, if we give ourselves an escape route, paradoxically, the need for the escape route will reduce.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was going to say, I would go a bit further. I would plan the escape.
Oh, fair enough.
On the basis of, you know, when you do a fire practice yeah. drill, so it will just happen automatically. I definitely do it all the time, without a doubt. I always say that I can choose to leave and I know how I'm going to leave as well. And people may want to extend that in terms of if there's a known difficulty in family gatherings, maybe you don't want to stay in that person's house, but you want to book yourself into a B&B or a hotel or something like that. Make sure you do take your car, etc. But as you say, knowing that you can leave reduces your anxiety about being stuck. And the idea that we have choice and are empowered to make choices really, really does improve our psychological outlook on life. And there's been plenty of research that has shown that feeling empowered in a situation improves your responses to those situations. So literally two people can have exactly the same experience, but one life event, but one experiences it very differently because they feel more empowered within that life event and they're doing what they can to support themselves. Yeah. And so that type of approach is really, really important. And you're definitely not betraying anybody by recognising that you have needs and that those needs are important. You need to meet them.
The other side of the coin is that Christmas somehow amplifies everything. And what I use in conversations like this is the example of a Christmas dinner. I could quite happily in April or in June cook a turkey on a Sunday for the Sunday roast. It's very straightforward. I'll cook mashed potatoes, roast potatoes. I'll do a few carrots, a bit of broccoli. I'll do a bit of ham and I'll make the gravy and I'll roast the turkey and we'll do it and we'll sit down and we'll eat it. And that was a lovely dinner. Suddenly, Christmas, it becomes this big, huge event. It's exactly the same dinner. It's exactly the same cooking process. But now, because it's Christmas, suddenly it's been amplified into something with a much deeper meaning. And somehow that sort of makes us think that cooking Christmas, I personally don't see how cooking Christmas dinner is any more difficult than cooking a roast on any other Sunday. Unless, of course, you feel the need, I have to do 7 different types of potatoes and 6 different carrot-based dishes. No, you don't. You do 2, mash and roast.
Yes. Well, I'd say a couple of things. First of all, I'm going to invite myself over to your Sunday dinner. It's delicious. So expect a guest.
It's going to be very straightforward.
I'll be eating it with you. Don't worry. The second thing I'd say is, yes, absolutely. The way we frame in psychotherapy and psychology, we talk about how we frame things in our mind. The framing that we put around something really affects our emotional responses to it. And we have this thing called normalization. When we can normalize something, when we can say, well, that's just expected, actually, our heightened emotional responses get reduced. Now, there is a weight of expectation around all festivals and a weight of expectation around the idea that these festivals, whatever they are somehow magically going to cut through whatever the complicated relationships are that we have with other people. And of course, they don't. What they do is they compress, they amplify, they add sort of more emotional material into whatever fire might exist anyway. And particularly when you think about it, something like this, it's not unexpected that it might have more sort of stress associated with it, because actually you're inviting maybe people to the meal that you don't often see, and there might be good reasons why you don't often see them. But there's an expectation that you will get together, even though you might spend a lot of the rest of the year preceding that trying to avoid somebody. But also, there are real pressures on families that we've been going through for some time. And this time of year, it's really important people understand that this time of year, because of that sort of pressure that is applied by society, often sees an increase. So if you have an underlying condition, whether that's you have an unhealthy relationship to drink, or you have an eating disorder, or you already have a condition such as anxiety or depression, you may relapse in your healthy habits around those disorders at this time of year. And it's very common, very common. And so if you've got specific issues such as that, it is really important to plan as though you're going to be triggered and look at your extra support needs. And that may be what's going on. And we understand these things. If we understand the reality of it, we can plan for it. If we plan for something with our specific support needs, we're less likely to have a relapse. We're less likely to sort of walk into something unawares and find ourselves sort of falling into a pit. And that we can avoid the pitfalls, as they say, and we can plan realistically for it.
Noel McDermott, it's been a pleasure speaking to you this morning. And if there's one takeaway from this, breathing can be the most important thing you'll do if you do it properly over Christmas. Noel, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
All right, mate. Merry Christmas to you.
And happy Christmas to you too. That's Noel McDermott there. He's a mental health expert and psychotherapist talking about festive anxiety and how to survive it. And I don't want to appear like this is a really clunky link, but I just want to remind you of our competition in association with the Silver Tassie Hotel and Seascape Spa. They're giving you a chance to win their Pamper Me Please package. It's a luxurious 2.5-hour spa package. It includes an aromatic steam session and cocoon room, a hot towel foot and back cleanse, a stress-relieving back massage, a Yonka facial with face and scalp massage, a pressure point foot massage, and snooze room relaxation time with refreshments. To win, just tell us which Christmas song mentions a one-horse open sleigh. Is it Jingle Bells or White Christmas? Text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25,000. Back in a bit. It's the 9th of Noon Show on Highland Radio. I just want to answer a question, because we've had a call from a listener saying, I was listening to the discussion on the book, the diet book for those with Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. Could you please repeat the name of the book? I certainly can. The book is, it's the Crohn's and Colitis Diet Information and Recipe Book. It's available through the Crohn's website. And the author of the book is Lorraine Cooney. And Lorraine is the one that we got to speak to on the programme this morning. So if you go into the Crohn's website, and you'll be able to get the details of the book there. So it's the Crohn's and Colitis Diet Information and Recipe Book. So that's how you can get through it. Speaking about festive anxiety just a moment ago, Connor says, I love Christmas but hate being in a very toxic environment. My parents' home is lovely but my husband's family home is brutal. We made an agreement to go to each house in turn till we had children. How do I convince my husband his parents' home is not a good place for him or for me? So asks the caller. And if you've any perspective to give our caller, please let us know. There are icons in music and across every genre of music and across every style of music, there are icons. And when it comes to Irish music, there are none more iconic, in my view, than Mary Coughlan. And Mary Coughlan is celebrating her 40th anniversary. And as part of that ongoing celebration, she's performing her 40th anniversary gig in Anne Greenan Theatre in Letterkenny on tomorrow night week, Thursday the 12th of December. Delighted to say that Mary Coughlan joins us on Zoom. Mary, a very good morning to you. Mary, I think you might still be muted. I see the little red mic beside your name there on the screen in front of me. So
I have unmuted myself.
Oh, lovely. You're unmuted. And that's the proper way to be. Mary Coughlan should never be muted and should never have been muted over the course of the past 40 years. Mary, hard to believe it's 40 years. I mean, what a career.
I know, yeah. I did the Olympia Theatre the other night and my family were there and my grandchildren. Previously, my parents had been there and my children 40 years ago when I did my first ever Olympia Theatre show 40 years ago. So, yeah, it's hard to believe, but it was probably better. I don't know. It's been amazing 40 years. Now, and I'm so grateful to be still here and doing it and all that.
I had the pleasure of speaking to you. Well, pleasure maybe is the wrong word given the context. We spoke over the course of COVID, and then we spoke afterwards about Spotify and payments from Spotify, and you were
That's
on
right.
along with Matt. And I remember telling you at the time, and I will repeat it. I mean, I remember way back, I was working on a pirate radio station in Limerick and pirates in Cork and Waterford as well. And over the course of that period in the mid 80s, one of the songs I played frequently was Double Cross. And I still regard it as one of the top 10 songs this country ever produced. An amazing piece of music from the Tired and Emotional album. In many cases, someone will bring out an album like Tired and Emotional, bring out a song like Double Cross, and then it stops. But in your case, it's gone on and on and on. And you're as strong now as you were back then?
Yeah. I mean, and I've started to write more of my own stuff, which is great. I worked, you know, as you probably know, most of my life with Eric Visser.
Yeah.
He was a Dutch composer who came to live in Ireland. I did the first album with him. He wrote for me and he produced all the albums. Eric has Parkinson's now. And he's unable to play the guitar or do much. But he did travel with his son from Holland on Friday for the Olympia. He came over on Thursday for the Olympia Theatre on Sunday night. So I work now with Pete Lennister, whom I wrote, you know, that album I did, Uncertain Pleasures.
Yeah.
Like Invisible was on it and Man of the World. So I've gone back to Pete for the last two albums and they've been really successful. Even though we are in a time of Spotify and all that, I've done really well. And it's strange to say, but all of the concerts that I did in COVID, especially from the house and my garden, have had the effect of increasing my audience at home and abroad. I went to Australia last year and New Zealand. I did 28 concerts. And I had to do two and three instead of one in Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne. Because they'd sold out. And it was people who had seen me probably for the first time, which is really weird, online during COVID.
And they were actual Aussies themselves, because usually
They were Aussies themselves.
Excellent. Because usually what happens is someone like you goes to Australia, you spend your entire time in Australia playing to expats, playing to Irish people. You meet people from Galway, Mayo, Donegal, Waterford, Cork, Limerick, Roscommon, Westmeath, and you could nearly go home having spent your time exclusively speaking to Irish people and hardly ever meeting an Aussie.
No, in my case, it's weird because the first time I sold, well, just to drop a name here, the first time I sold out the Sydney Opera House, I...
Say that again, Mary, it sounds good. The first time you sold out where?
I sold out the Sydney Opera House. I asked them because I was curious, and they said that it was 80% of their usual clientele, which would be a mixture of tourists and Sydney natives that have year-long membership to the Opera House for the concerts. Nowadays, I think it's a lot younger, the people that go to Australia. But the last time I was in Australia, I kept running into people who were over for either weddings of their children, and they would have been my age group, or the birth of their grandchildren. So that's a whole new take on what's going on in Australia. I'm now meeting the grandparents of people who've moved out there, you know, in the past 20 years. But there you go. It's great. Anyway, whoever comes, the gigs are all brilliant.
One of the characteristics of your career has been that you're uncompromising. And you were uncompromising from the start. And that's been key to your success. And you've had that success largely on your own terms. Obviously, there have been hurdles to overcome. But how important has it been to you that over the course of that 40 years, you've always remained true to yourself?
I think that's been, I think that's true. I suppose over the years, I don't know, I've been asked to be, I've been asked several times to change my producer to maybe be more kind of popular music. I've always kind of stuck to my guns and done the songs like, you know, the Magdalene Laundry and the Johnny Doohan song, The Whiskey Didn't Kill the Pain. There was a lot of grief when record companies didn't want me to sing those songs, but I did stick to my guns. And for it, I was punished. I got dropped straight away afterwards by the record company, but I persevered on my own. And I suppose in that way, I have been uncompromising about my material and about my musical style, you know.
And even right back in the 80s, you were writing songs like My Land Is Too Green, which, you know, is an absolutely fantastic song, but also has a very clear message and a message that says, look, this is the situation we're in, and I'm not going to sit up here and sing the 40 Shades of Green and be the Irish performer that some people might want me to be. I'm proud of being Irish, but we ain't without our faults, and I'm going to put that on the page and you know, do it straightforwardly.
Yeah, I'm very pleased about that. There was a concert in the Mansion House for the late Niall McCafferty 2 weeks ago, and all of the journalists, whoever spoke out about such stuff, and Niall was very, very vociferous, and she wrote constantly about troubles in Ireland from the 70s on. But journalists like Olivia O'Leary and people stood up and read out her interviews, or not her interviews, her articles that she had written in the Irish Times and various newspapers down through the years. And they invited me to sing some of those songs that I had sung through the 80s and the 90s. So that was really a big privilege for me. So, yeah, I've always done. Johnny Mulhern wrote that incredible song about the Magdalene Laundries. We've written about drug addiction, the Ice Cream Man. You know, everything. That's another Johnny Mulhern song. And I did them all at the Olympia the other night. And I will be doing them in Letterkenny. And I think I've probably told you before, but my name is Mary Doherty. I'm from Donegal originally.
You have indeed. A lot of people were surprised to hear that.
Yeah, I am. My father was Peter Doherty from up in Burnfoot. So I'm a red-headed Doherty.
Well, we'll all be delighted to welcome you home, Mary, on tomorrow week, the 12th of December. As you said, it's going to be a gig of new material, old material, the stuff you've gone through the years. And before we go any further, by the way, you did reference that The Whiskey Doesn't Kill the Pain was written by Johnny Doohan. And I know the loss of Johnny last month in Galway is one that you, as many others, would have felt in the music industry and far beyond.
Yes. Yeah, Johnny. The funny thing about that song was Johnny sent me two songs, and the two songs were okay, but we found that they were very similar. And Eric suggested to him, he didn't like the idea at first. I remember having a cup of tea with him. We suggested that we would make two songs into one great song, and that's what we did. And he was very pleased with the outcome in the end. And it was on my biggest selling album of all time, so, and that was long before Spotify, so I suppose he made a few bob out of it as well, so that's great.
Excellent. Mary, the gig, as we say, it's the 40th anniversary gig. It's in Ungrayden Theatre on next Thursday. It's the 12th of December. I mean, I'm sure there's very few people out there that are not, that aren't familiar with your music. But just in case anybody isn't, we're going to say goodbye to you, Mary, and we're going to give people just a little taste of your music. So as we say goodbye to Mary Doherty from Burnfoot, otherwise known as Mary Coughlin, closely associated with Galway, but really from Donegal, let the truth be known. Mary, we wish you all the best. It'll be lovely to see you in Ungrayden. Anytime I've seen you live, it's been absolutely incredible. And Mary Coughlin...
Oh, thanks a million.
Thank you very much indeed. Final reminder of our Cadbury Secret Santa feature that's taking place all this week. They have 22,000 bars to give away to celebrate the return of the Secret Santa. We have two huge hampers of chocolate to give away, plus a €50 voucher every day to be won. All you need to do is tell us who you would want to surprise with a Secret Santa bar this year. Why do they deserve it? Just give us a text. Let us know what reason you have to surprise someone with a Secret Santa bar from Cadbury. You can win €50 and also be into the draw to win a Cadbury hamper for you and your nominee. All with thanks to Cadbury Secret Santa. And don't forget, if you want to send a bar to someone in secret, look out for the special posters around the county. And you can text or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000 with the name of your nominee and the reason why you are nominating them. I want to mention just briefly business matters. Now, there was not a business matters on Sunday because we were all tied up in election coverage. So business matters didn't go out on Sunday, the podcast. So business matters will go out on this coming Sunday, as usual, after the 6 o'clock news. There isn't a new podcast this week. Chris isn't with us. As we said, because of the election and the election coverage, that put business matters on hold. So business matters will be broadcast. It's available online as a podcast already. And if you want to listen to business matters on air, business matters will go out, as we say, as usual on Sunday. And it will be the same one as was covered by Chris last week. But the election pretty much took care of everything. A few comments. Caller says, I take Simproof, which is available in health shops. It's the best thing I ever took for Crohn's and colitis. And just to repeat what Lorraine said when we spoke to her, absolutely, if you find something that helps you, by all means, take it. We can never assume that something that helps us helps everybody else. But certainly, if you found something that works for you, share the information by all means. And Simproof is the name of that product that our caller is taking. Another caller says, I've just been diagnosed with ulcerative colitis on infusions. I find the people at work are not very understanding, particularly when I have to take time off with a flare-up or after my infusions. And I suppose that's one of those cases where dialogue in the workplace is really, really important. And the workplace does have a responsibility to provide a working environment and to provide support for people who need it, I would have thought. This is one which I'm going to put out there, and if anyone can offer any advice and perspective on this. A listener says, I'm nearly 5 years separated from my abusive ex-husband. My child and I had to leave the home and my belongings because of this abuse. I'm 3 years with legal aid, trying to get a separation agreement and settlement sorted, and also divorce. My ex-husband does not cooperate with any of it. His new partner is now selling my belongings on Facebook and refuses to take them down when I explained to her that they are mine. I'm totally bewildered with this hopeless situation. Have any of your listeners any advice? I'm getting nowhere, unfortunately, with legal aid. He's just doing whatever he wants. If anyone can offer any perspective or advice to our listener, please do so. A hedge on the road beside me, a caller says, has been very nicely cut back. However, quite a lot of cuttings are lying on the footpath, rendering it very dangerous to walk on. I'm a disabled woman and find it impossible to walk there anymore. Who is responsible for clearing up this dangerous mess? The county council, the hedge owner, or the person who cut the hedge? My immediate thought would be that if it's a hedge on a private property that's been cut, the responsibility, I would have thought, would lie with the owner of the hedge. However, I am no expert, and I have no legal training or specialist legal knowledge, so I couldn't really answer that question. I would have thought it's the owner. And I just wonder, is it possible just to have a quiet word with the owner and say, look, I'm concerned about this, please clear it. Caller says, this is my first Christmas on my own after a divorce. How do I assure others that I'm okay being alone and I don't want to be in a house full of couples? That's I think talk to them, tell people, you know, let family members know, yes, I'm fine. And sometimes that's all that's necessary. A caller has sent us some pictures they took on a walk this week on the Greenway at Muff. The litter that's been thrown around, and they say this is only a fraction of what's there. I mean, there's wonderful work being done on greenways. There's wonderful work being done on providing pathways and walking ways. And as someone who would walk pretty much daily, it's wonderful to see these greenways and pathways. I really, really think that anyone that compromises that by littering is... No. Please don't do it. Please. Potter says, I don't know, is it time for a referendum on Irish citizenship? Should we stop granting Irish citizenship so regularly? That's a question that's being put out there. Indirect advertising on the soaps every night on the TV, all before the watershed, not setting good example. This happens in the UK too. On Panorama on BBC One last week, they showed high rates of women suffering liver disease due to heavy drinking and alcohol abuse. That goes back to our conversation earlier in the show with Paula Leonard. We were talking about the prices and how a person saw a price advertised of 450 and ended up paying something like 680. Caller says, I have an issue with the shops advertising drinks prices without the government tax included or displayed. If I buy something at 450 but at the till it was 680, I could be left unable to pay for it and be embarrassed if I pay for petrol. The VAT's included in the price. It's not added after I go to purchase it. Why is the drinks tax not operating the same way? Now, the figures might be slightly different, but I have potentially a perspective on this. I think what this may be a reference to, and I stress may be a reference to, and I have no knowledge that it is this the 15 cent a can or 25 cent a bottle return tax, which is effectively that we pay the 15 cent and then get it back when we put the bottle or the can into a machine. Because I do know that if you go to a supermarket or whatever, you will see the price, a pallet of cans, 10 euro or 5 bottles for 5 euro or whatever. And then underneath that in little, in tiny lettering, it'll say 10 cans, 10 euro, and then underneath it'll say 11.50 with return tax. And that'll be in tiny print that you can't read and would need a magnifying glass and a pair of binoculars to actually find. That could be the case. And it's an absolutely fair point, Carter. I think in this country, anyone goes to the US, in the US they will actually, you'll see a price. And then, and I got caught badly the first time I was in the US. I was in the airport in New York and I had a few bits of spare change in my pocket. And I said, right, I'm going to go. And I picked two bars of chocolate and whatever it was, Hershey's or something. And I went and I had the exact change. And I was so proud of myself. Here we go. It's going to cost me whatever, $1.12. And I had exactly $1.12. Went to the till and it was actually $1.30 because I hadn't factored in the tax. I ended up having to break a $10 note and create even more change. Caller says, I rang an insurance company to get a quote for home insurance. I got it, no issue. I rang another company and they are insisting on me telling them who I'm with before they give me a quote. They said, we don't quote against sister companies. Is this not like operating a cartel and is it legal? Any advice? Interesting one. I hadn't thought of that before. Disability benefit, caller says, should not be means tested for disabled people. They may have savings, but they're supposed to help them live, so the state is neglecting them. Caller says, your coverage of the election was amazing. I enjoyed every minute of it. I didn't miss a minute of it until you went off the air in the early hours of Monday morning. It amazed me how one group of people could do what you did and stay on air for 16 hours. Well done to you and Mila Buecas from Ecuador, listener. I can tell you that we did indeed do the guts of 16 hours on Sunday. We did 16 hours on Saturday as well, actually. I think I calculated we did 35 hours between the 2 days. Finally, before we go for a break, Hodder says, I'm delighted to see that we're getting a real representative opposition in this country with the rise of Social Democrats and Labour. I hope they stay out of government. Sinn Féin are a hollow party. Mary Lou will never lead this country. Sinn Féin's chance has gone. Great to see Charles Ward elected despite Sinn Féin and company's attempts to hinder him. I saw no evidence that Sinn Féin were trying to hinder Charles Ward. But, I mean, that's your perspective, Hodder. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We're joined on the line by Roisin, who has befriended a Kurdish family currently living in Letterkenny, but it's a family with special needs. Roisin, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed. Roisin, this family, they have two young lads in wheelchairs, and that puts them in a vulnerable position.
Absolutely. So that I befriended them to the international platform through a little English group that we do. Siobhan is 19 and he has muscular dystrophy. His brother, Bowan, is 22 and he has muscular dystrophy and special needs. And back last summer, they wanted to go to Waterford because they have a Kurdish community there and they invited them down for a holiday. And it was absolutely chaotic, shall we say the least of it. At that stage, they just had normal wheelchairs. And in order to get them on the bus, first of all, you have to book 2 days in advance. And we couldn't get that done. So the father in the family had to literally carry the boys onto the bus on his back, trail them up the steps of the bus to travel to Dublin. And people are under the idea that, you know, that these people have free travel. It cost €200 for the trip to Dublin. I got some sponsorship, and because these people only get the basic €38 a week. And then when we got to Dublin to Bus Aires, they were getting a connection into Waterford, and we were very, very fortunate. We met an absolutely lovely bus driver, and the people on the bus that were already seated on the bus going to Waterford got up and moved back a few seats to let these people sit on the front, because obviously the father wouldn't want to be trailing them down the bus.
Yeah.
And we were told that the machine was broken for payment, so that they travelled to Waterford. And back there recently again, the same thing happened. We had to go to Dublin. And again, because now they have electric wheelchairs, and we weren't able to get the bus booked, so it was just the old wheelchairs. And again, we couldn't travel on the one bus because we hadn't booked it. And two, the father and the son went on the first bus, and then we went on the second bus. Siobhan wanted to go to meet somebody from IPASS, and unfortunately IPASS don't deal with face-to-face callers. They only deal with emails. So that was our experience.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Siobhan is 19, and I think we actually met you, Donald, down the street.
You did. I spoke to yourself and Siobhan just over two weeks yeah. ago.
That's right.
Awaiting a visitor that never came. But we won't say any more about that.
No, but exactly. Yeah, well, Siobhan wanted to meet you.
Yeah.
And Siobhan is, he's an absolutely beautiful, beautiful young man, 19 years of age, and they came to Ireland, and people might react and say, well, what took them to Ireland? And there's none of us that wouldn't travel if we thought we could do something for our children. And at the moment, he's getting no physio. He's, as he said to me, his legs don't work, my arms don't work, but my brain works very well. And he's very determined, and doesn't really probably realise the extent of his, you know, disability. And they would like to move out of Letterkenny, obviously, because there are no Kurdish people living in Letterkenny. And Bawan, who has special needs, is non-verbal,
yeah.
but can, you know, interact, hear what people are talking about. So obviously they would love to hear, you know, to be in their Kurdish community. So that's my experience. And even today, just I got a taxi into town there, and coming along the Ballyrain Road, somebody had parked their car on the footpath, on the road.
Yeah.
And sometimes Siobhan comes round to meet me, you know, to the house to see me. And I was just thinking, well, if he were coming round today, there's a car parked on the footpath. So it was completely blocking his access, you know, to the footpath.
Roisin, all we can, it's really sad to hear stories like that. And all we can do really is, I mean, I know you're working with various agencies to see what can be done to help the lads. In the meantime, all we can do is look, offer you and them our best wishes. And hopefully, now that this is out in the public domain, something may come of that. But for the moment, that's Roisin, right. thank you very much.
They're not entitled either to free travel. This idea is out there that, everybody gets free travel. They don't get free travel, actually, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, as I said, just that maybe we were a little bit more charitable and more thoughtful. And I know there's loads of people in Ireland, Irish people that have disabilities. But that's, like, we are so cut off in Donegal. Now, Local Link, we have travelled to Rathmullen on Local Link on numerous occasions, and they are absolutely fantastic. Yeah. They have great wheelchair accessibility.
And maybe in the short term, the message to Bus Éireann is, look, please make it easier to book in advance and to understand the situation
exactly.
people are in.
Yeah.
Roisin, thank you very much indeed. Time's beaten us, I'm afraid.
Thank you all for taking my call. I really do appreciate it. Thanks very much for
no
all
problem
the work
at all.
You, video do. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, Roisin. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye. That's Roisin. Bye-bye. Now, before we go, and we're going to be going in just a moment, I want to share with you the winner of the Secret Santa chocolate hamper. the, well, the person who deserves the hamper hasn't been won yet, that's coming up on Friday, but the nominee is Joanne Doherty. Caller says, every Friday night and Saturday morning, Joanne looks after my father Raymond, who's a vulnerable, disabled, elderly man. Therefore, thanks to Joanne, we get this time off. She does it out of the kindness of her heart to give a break to the full-time carer. She will not accept any payment for doing this. Joanne loves chocolate and she would certainly deserve this hamper, as she has been doing this for us for years. And that comes, Joanne, from your cousin. So Joanne has been nominated and is today's nominee, and Joanne and the nominator go into the pot, as it were, for the final draw on Friday to see who actually wins that hamper. But a Secret Santa chocolate bar on its way to Joanne. And Joanne, I hope it's the nicest chocolate bar you've ever tasted. 2 minutes to midday. It's time to say goodbye. John Breslin's up next around the Northwest. Thank you to all of our participants on the show. Thanks to all of our listeners, and thank you to Shannon and to Caroline and to Barry as well, all of whom helped on the programme this morning, especially Caroline, who as always produced. 9 till noon show back tomorrow again at 12 noon, but for now, have a great day.